Very good morning, everybody. We have half a minute to go, but it's so silent that we should take the time to already present our first speakers this morning. This is Patricia Shaw and colleagues, which are Gloria Crummer-Webster, Laura Crummer, and Kari Mortimer. There they are all, which will tell us how in Kwakwaka'wakw, worlds of knowledge are shared through Kota.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge, first of all, our presence here on the territory of the Hawaiian people and thank our hosts and the conference organizers for their wonderfully warm hospitality. And it's indeed been a great privilege to be here amongst so many dedicated and inspiring people to be here. So thank you very much. I'd like to start also our presentation with an acknowledgement to the elders that we've worked with for the research here. And so that includes one of our co-presenters, Gloria Crummer-Webster, Peter Maddalpy, Chief Robert Joseph, Pauline Alfred, Vera Newman, Peggy Slonthick, and I'd also like to acknowledge the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada for support under an Aboriginal Strategic Research Grant for this work. Okay. The gold color on this map of the coast of British Columbia, Canada, represents the Waukashan language family. And the language that we will be talking about, Kwakwala, is a northern Waukashan language traditionally spoken in the territory that extends across the northern part of Vancouver Island here and across to the opposing mainland, including the smaller islands in between. And this map from the Umista Cultural Center provides a close-up of this territory and shows the traditionally recognized division of the Kwakwala language into five major dialects. This is a very rich ecological niche. One of the kiota that we'll be talking about relates to the annual salmon run up one of the deepest of the inlets on the mainland, which is Knight Inlet, which you can see on this map here. Going up here, you can see how very deep it is. So, what are kiota? Kiota means to play with strings. So here's a picture of Julia Averkieva, a Russian ethnographer who traveled with Boaz in 1930 on his last expedition to Kwakwala territory, making one of the traditional Kwakwaka'wakw string figures, this one called the Bear's Cape. The extensive field notes on string games from Julia Averkieva's trip with Boaz in 1930 remained unpublished for several decades until an extremely dedicated biochemist, we're talking about interdisciplinarity and teamwork, Mark Sherman, who devotes a tremendous amount of his leisure time to the study of string figures, tracked down Averkieva's manuscripts and engaged in the very challenging process of deciphering her notes and diagrams. The edited collection was published in English, she was Russian, by UBC Press in 1992, over 60 years after Averkieva's fieldwork. Even at the time they were documented, Averkieva reported, this was in 1930, that the figures were not played extensively, and they have, in the generations since then, fallen away from practice and memory. However, my research colleagues here each have a very special relationship to the woman pictured on the cover of Averkieva and Sherman's book. Her Kwakwala name is Gwintilak. Her English name is Agnes Cranmer. She is Gloria Crummer-Webster's mother, Laura Cranmer's grandmother, and Kari Mortimer's great aunt. So the man pictured in this next slide also bears a very special relationship to Averkieva's research, and Kari will introduce you to him.
Do I click it to start?
No. Oh, yes, I'll do that. Oh, you just talk.
All right. This is just a short bit of a relative in the village I come from, in the village Trish Rossborough comes from. This is Trish's uncle, Peter Maddalpy, who is, that we know, the only one, the only Kwakwala-speaking person who still makes string figures. He taught us quite a bit. We had a lot of fun with Peter.
And my things have disappeared. Oh, this is a shame.
Mm. What I forgot is that, sorry, his uncle and father were people who worked with Avakeva in her gathering strings. Sorry about that.
So am I. What I will try to do, because he's a very special person, being the only person that we've found who has any memory of that, and he's amazingly fluid. What I suggest we do is we continue with our presentation, and we'll come back and we'll show it at the end, so I can get out of the PD, the PowerPoint, and show it to you. Okay. Let me proceed then. What's particularly exciting about Avakeva's field notes is that her documentation stands as the most comprehensive Native American string collection ever assembled from a single tribe. So there's rich ethnographic contextualization of the social context of the creation and the function of string figures. There's step-by-step instructions for making each figure. The interpretation requires serious commitment. And fortunately, Sherman, bless him, has made a video of how to make every string figure, which is great. The transcription is in Boasian orthography, which has been challenging for us, but anybody who's working with Kwakwala eventually has to confront the reality of the wonderful documentation by Boas. Unfortunately, there's no transcription of the music itself, so we've been trying to track down sources for that. So what are the challenges? The Boasian orthography, plus the fact that the communities in Kwakwaka'wakw territory have two orthographies. One is the Umista orthography, a practical orthography written on a typewriter with underlining to primarily distinguish the other characters, and the phonetic orthography. There's more than 80 years time depth, 1930 to the present, so there are questions as to what might be normal diachronic change. The language is currently critically endangered. There's significant language loss at every level of the grammar. Dialect differences are also not broadly documented, so there are questions as to what degree that might impact on things. Documentation, our goals are documentation, revitalization. This used to be called Indian TV, and lots of social warmth and memories come with this. And I just want to briefly say that from a cross-linguistic perspective, Kwakwala, as some of you may know, has a particularly rich system of suffixes denoting space limitations. There are at least 101 of these. Amongst the features of the language which are being lost are these, but the Kyoto are rich with examples of that. So you can do some locative suffix spotting as we go through. I'll just give you some hints here of the kinds of things you'll find. And then there are some other Kyoto resources that we've also been able to dig up, and we're trying to make them, relate them to one another. Okay, so let's take a look at some of the Kyoto figures, and Carrie is going to start with one entitled Lying on Back in Canoe.
You've got the same information as you
want. I can move it and you can read.
Okay. Part of the work that I did to prepare was to look at two versions of the same song or two related ones. One is from Avakeva called Lying on Back in Canoe. It deals with an invitation to a man on the beach who's in his canoe to offer him 4 fern roots and his response to it. And the second one offers the man 1 box of coppers, 2, 3, and then 4 boxes of fern roots, at which point he jumps up and he takes the hat. So the concept of 4 is significant. It runs through everything, anywhere you read, any stories, there are 4 features. And it speaks about coppers, an important symbol of wealth and standing in our culture. We have someone among us who has, there are names derived from this cultural feature, and one of Gloria Cranmer Webster's names is Oui, que la lisse mère, a copper-carrying woman. Other names derived from the word aqua are aquagila, copper maker, aquagila oqua, copper maker woman, aquascum, covered with copper. The other issue, which is a little, I was introduced to it and I find it elsewhere now, is that fern roots were, if a man was offered fern roots in the big house and they were long, the person giving the fern roots was saying to everyone who was witnessing that this was a man of standing, the one receiving. And conversely, if the fern roots were short, he was saying something else. I'm a bit lost now.
Here we go.
The third one that I looked at, we fell in love with this 4 years ago in Pat's class. It's simply kind of throwing out concepts, I guess. We imagined all kinds of things that Auntie Glo doesn't really see. Everybody has different questions when they look at this. And to me, it talked about women, sisterhood of women, and the support and the reality of women. Is the plural of ash, to touch. So these arms through, it's two arms touching, and about women being likened to the heavenly bodies, to the sun, the moon, and the stars. It's a string figure. Our great-grandmother was painted making, and it's one that I can do successfully sometimes.
Great. Thank you, Carrie. Okay, now we'll invite Laura up here.
Are you going to talk about who this is? So I just want to say a few words in Kwakwala, formal introduction. So Pele Kastakla Nugwadi Ikthala Gyayutlin Lachida Nimbis Lachan Oskitme Gyayut Amcha and Lachida Old Masit Lachan Abaskitme Achestin Kin Mumul Gashlechok the Gukulutas Hawaii Kaans Gathanayans Washa Lachuk Wallace Ik Awitnagwis. Hello, my name is Laura Cranmer. I've recognized my origins on my father and mother's side, and I thank our hosts and the tribes of Hawaii for the reason we have come to sit here on their good land. So the first image is of my paternal great-grandmother, who in one of my earliest memories is entertaining me with kyota. I recall her delight in my reactions to the string figures and making her laugh. In this painting, she is holding up the string figure titled Sun, Moon, and Stars. There are five Kwakwa Kiwag presenters here at this conference who are all connected to and through Abaya. Deanna Nicholson, Trish Rasborough, Carrie, and Yotu and myself. Yes. And so just carrying on with the next slide. I was drawn to this song because of its repetitive pattern of call and response. Where the salmon is asked, where are you jumping? And the salmon's response in four different stanzas reveals his journey. So the question arose for me in the next. How do we know, apart from the title, that it is the salmon being addressed? The morphemic breakdown asks the question at the beginning of the line, where, followed by the lexical suffix denoting heading, followed by the continuative belted L and the second person us, and finally the verb akya, there is nothing in the stanza that specifically says salmon. We find it is only through implication that it is the salmon through the verb akya, because only salmon akya and people dehua, or people jump. And this next slide shows the territory and the journey that the salmon goes through in the Kwakwaka'wakw territory in Knight Inlet. It's just one small region of the Kwakwaka'wakw territory. You'll notice that the string figure up in the corner from Sherman's book parallels the shape of the salmon's journey following the lyrics. Sequentially, he jumps from Gwadzi to Giyu, then to Hanwadi, which is meaning a place for pink salmon, and then finally up to Zawadi. The other verse I want to look at comes from the song for the string figure titled The Two Bear Brother Jealousy Series. While Sherman observes that this is not found, this particular string figure is not found anywhere else in the world, in his book he does comparative analysis between the different cultural productions of string figures. This particular string figure only occurs in Kwakwaka'wakw territory, and there are four different versions of the same song, of the same figure. This is a song that accompanies a string game about two brothers going out to gather moss. At first, the older brother rejects the younger brother's request to tag along. But the line I'm going to look at is the younger brother's response to that rejection. So slide six. So, Dahwa kulsach nula bidza was wisa. So, Dahwa is the verb to jump. Kuls is pass outside on the ground. And older brother, so this is, and bidza was wisa. So this is the voice of the younger brother taunting the older brother, saying, I can beat you. And the string figure for this version ends with the little brother jumping past the older brother, thereby besting him at who can walk the fastest, as one of the previous lines in the song has the older brother telling his pesky little brother to go away, or else she will slow me down.
And you can see the progression in these two string figures.
And in both cases, in the first one, the salmon, the string figure action reveals the visual journey, and in the action in this, it reveals the message. So there's a deep connection between the message and the visual, the image produced by the string figure. Yeah. Okay. For my part, deconstructing the song lyrics into its constituent parts of speech has greatly increased my understanding of the inner mechanics of how Kwakola works, and I found that it is cumulative and repetitive, and it has helped me build on what we've started for Dr. Shaw's class 4 years ago. For me, a childhood memory born out of love and connection was severed. This study has become a doorway to other worlds of perception, worlds of knowing, and most importantly, a doorway to reconnection with family members, both past and living. Thank you. Fela Kessler.
And our final speaker is Gloria Kramer Webster.
Like Tesla, Gavrik, who's Olam Babuns, Laho, Inker, Owenag with Sir Hawaiian, Olak Alla Ekin, Noka. thank you. I'm grateful that I have been allowed to visit the beautiful land of the Hawaiians. My heart is very glad. My great-grandfather, George Hunt, worked with the renowned anthropologist Franz Boas for almost 40 years, beginning in the late 1890s. On March 15, 1930, George wrote to Franz, commenting on the state of our language at that time. He said, "One thing I know, they lost about two-thirds of their language, for there are lots of Indians, comes and asks me the meaning of the words. This is the reason I say the language is disappearing." So here we are, 83 years later, with our language in even worse shape than it was then. Mine may be the last generation with any degree of fluency in Kwakwaka'wakw. I mention this to give you some idea of the challenges we face in working with Kyot, our string figures. The language used in the chants is often different from that used by only a few people today. A videotape of my late mother and late aunt was made in 1986. My mother was 76 years old. My aunt was in her mid-90s. They spoke of their childhood, including learning Kyota from their older relatives, with whom they would gather every evening or when the weather was bad. Both remembered that the old people knew many Kyota. Among them, a man was completely blind. One gets a strong sense of the closeness there was between young and old in earlier times, when two or three generations of one family lived in the same house. While we can't go back to multi-generational living arrangements, we need to find a way to use Kyota as a way of teaching Kwakwala and the culture in which it thrived. There are so many lessons to be learned from Kyota. In the two brothers figure, children can learn about the traditional uses of moss, including its use as disposable diapers long before white people invented them. Ours were better because they were biodegradable. In learning the man in the canoe figure, children might ask, we've had reference already to the man in the canoe, why did the man choose four fern roots over four boxes of coppers? Was he boasting that he was so wealthy he didn't need any more coppers? What were coppers used for? How were fern roots harvested and when? Were other roots used for food? Does the number four mean anything? The salmon Kyota is a lesson in geography with its list of place names and their meanings. When I worked at the Umistead Cultural Center, my mother and I taught Kwakwala to a class of young parents and their children who shared a new experience. It was our most successful class. For Kyota to work as a teaching tool, that's the way it's got to be done. Adults and children learning together, involving as many of the grandparents as possible. We all know about dysfunctional families in our communities, and maybe Kyota is a way to reestablish strong relationships between young and old. Today we have to compete with TV, cell phones, and all those other tech things that scare the hell out of me. So we better get it right. They love cats.
We have some 6 minutes for questions.
Oh.
Are there any questions before we watch the little film?
Oh, yes.
That's much better.
Yes.
Quick question. The different, is it Kyoto?
Kyoto.
Kyoto. Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm wondering, are these different techniques, these passed down through families intergenerationally? Is there sort of is there a family tradition for different types of stories?
Would you like to answer that?
Go ahead. Well, my understanding of it is that there were people who, in these gatherings, showed not only an interest in singing the songs, but could actually make the strings. And from this DVD that Angie Glow talked about, her mother says how people would practice and start all over again. You had to really try hard to do cha-cha well. So there were experts, and people would gather around the experts, and that would produce in that number another X percent of people who could make the string figures. I'd like to make a point. At the time when Avakeva said there weren't many people making the strings, our population was just beginning to come back from almost disappearing. So,
thank you. Okay, here we go.
It's recording now.
Notre de clé vidéo.
Oh, is that strings?
Yeah, I've been sitting here sort of doing that.
Clé.
Leaning tree.
Quill.
You say it.
This is quill.
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 Quill. Why are we not get there? That's Jacob's quill. Last month I grabbed it as a signal. Does it as Jacob's quill? Because does it?
Wait. Very cool.
Tell that was a duck, of course.
Thank you very much.
There's time for one more question if somebody still wants to. Okay, so the things are speaker again.